Good morning. Are council ready?
Please proceed. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mary Beth Musumeci. I'm with the Disabilities Law Program at Community Legal Aid Society, and I represent the appellant, Candace Urban. I would like to request the court's permission to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Medicaid is a medical assistance program that provides health insurance benefits for people who cannot pay for those services. The benefits package for Medicaid beneficiaries under age 21 is called the Early Periodic Screening, Diagnosis, and Treatment Program, EPSDT, and it is designed to provide a comprehensive preventative health care program for children, including prompt treatment. Candace Urban is a young woman who qualifies for Medicaid on the basis of indigency. Her doctors have recommended reduction mammoplasty, which was denied by Delaware's Medicaid managed care contractor. The issue proceeded to a fair hearing, which is the administrative process required by federal law for these appeals, and then to the Superior Court. This case asks this court to determine important aspects of the legal analysis and the process that govern decision-making in Medicaid fair hearings involving benefits for children under the EPSDT program.
How old is she now?
She is currently 19. EPSDT covers children up through age 21.
Counsel, as I understand it, and tell me whether I understand it correctly, the issue is not so much whether Ms. Urban would get pre-authorization for the surgery, but when that authorization would be given. That is, it was conditioned, but was it not, on her losing weight and reducing the body mass ratio to a certain level or below a certain level?
Yes, that is the position that the Medicaid program has taken.
And the record seems to indicate that Ms. Urban has lost weight. Has she now dropped to the level where she would be even, by the physicians who initially had recommended against, would she be eligible now to obtain pre-authorization for the surgery?
She has not dropped to that level. This case raises five legal errors for the court to review de novo. First, the hearing officer's failure to properly consider relevant federal Medicaid law. Second, the failure to properly consider the May 2005 letter from Dr. Chang, which was admitted as evidence at the fair hearing. Third, whether the burden of proof was properly placed on Ms. Urban rather than on the Medicaid program at the hearing. Fourth, whether the evidence was properly analyzed in light of federal law requiring deference to the treating physician's opinion. And finally, the failure to properly address procedural due process violations raised at the fair hearing.
Is there any difference between your first and your fourth arguments?
Well, they're certainly related, Your Honor.
I gathered, although, I'd like you to clarify, that your position is that once the physician writes a letter taking the position that that breast reduction surgery was medically necessary, that's the end of the case. That is, that under Medicaid law, the provider has to grant the authorization. Is that right?
The state does retain some role in the decision-making process. However, other courts certainly have gone that far.
Is that your position, or is your position that the state still retains some discretion in the process or some role in the process?
The state retains the authority to look at whether the service is necessary to correct or ameliorate. That is what they did not do in this case. That's the first problem, is they did not apply the appropriate test.
Well, the record seems to show that they did find that the surgery would be necessary to correct or ameliorate, but they also found that the surgery would be very risky and may not be efficacious until Ms. Urban lost a certain amount of weight. Is the state not allowed to make that finding?
In that case, Your Honor, it is appropriate to defer to the treating doctors who are, first of all, specialists who routinely do these procedures and are familiar with the risks. As Dr. Cooper testified at the hearing, certainly there are risks associated with any surgical procedure, but if the risks outweigh the benefits, it's not something that would be ever done. And he applied the standards looked to in his profession to determine that surgery was appropriate to correct or ameliorate Ms. Urban's condition.
At that time?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So your position is that, at least in this case, the state had no discretion. Once the treating physician took that position, that was the end of the matter. Is that right? Under Medicaid law.
I think that's fair to say, Your Honor. Other courts who have looked at this have looked to whether the state has the opinion of a competing specialist, who has actually examined the child. For example, the Fifth Circuit in SD versus Hood found no support for the state's decision that service was not medically necessary when the court said the sole evidence supporting this conclusion was offered by a doctor who had never examined the child and did not have the same qualifications as the child's treating experts.
I'm not sure whether you're qualifying your answer to my question or not. That is the doctor's letter determinative or isn't it?
Dr. Cooper's testimony is determinative because the state did not come forward with evidence sufficient to overcome that.
What would that evidence be? I mean, give me an example of what evidence might be sufficient.
Well, if they had another plastic surgeon, if they had somebody who had done an independent medical examination, the point of the EPSDT program is to provide broad coverage for children. The statute talks about providing any diagnostic, screening, preventative, and rehabilitative services, including any medical or remedial services, for the maximum reduction of physical or mental disability and restoration of an individual to the best possible functional level. So I think we're starting from the position that many things are coverable, and Congress's intent was to provide a broad, comprehensive package of benefits for these children.
Let me give you a hypothetical, and I do not by any means want to suggest that I think this is what we're dealing with here. But let's say you have an obese child who is so obese that it's medically a problem. It's not in the child's best interest to be that size. And there are two options. Either the child gets put on a fairly strict nutritional program, perhaps with exercise, in order to bring down the child's weight, or the child could get liposuction and just the next day have lost 40 pounds. If you have a choice of treatments in that case, is there something in your reading of the law that says, well, if my doctor says that liposuction is the treatment of choice, then that's the one that I'm entitled to have?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that is an appropriate reading of the federal law, that there should, that's the role for deference to the treating doctor who knows the patient the best.
So in other words, it doesn't matter whether there are other steps that would be less expensive, less risky, perhaps in some respect better in the long run for the child's health. If the doctor is saying, yeah, but, you know, this will reduce the weight a lot faster and it's important that we get the weight off this child, that's enough?
Well, I think that is the question whether it's better for the child's health to have a less expensive procedure. I mean, it depends what you're taking into the analysis.
Well, all right, let's bring it back to what we have here, which, as I understand the record, is that this child has a serious problem that should be addressed, no question about it. And the issue is whether it should be addressed surgically before the child loses a certain amount of weight, or whether it should not be addressed surgically until other steps, in this case, weight loss, is accomplished. I'm having trouble understanding why that's a denial of medical services in under the law, because it's not a denial, it's a treatment plan. It's a prerequisite, if you will, but it's not a denial of the ultimate reduction surgery. It's just you have to do this first. Why is that not permissible under the federal statute?
Well, I think two reasons. One is, are we making the right inquiry? Are we looking at whether it's necessary to correct or ameliorate, or are we looking at what's the most appropriate? And this Medicaid program here looked at what was the most appropriate service and not duplicative of other services under state law. Federal courts have said we can't read other terms that are restrictive like that into the necessary to correct or ameliorate analysis.
Isn't that really a semantic war? That is, even the physician that whose testimony was adverse to your client said, yes, I believe that a death reduction surgery is medically necessary, but it isn't medically necessary now. It's more important that the weight, that is the body mass index, be reduced because of the danger to this child. Is it a fair reading of the record to say that given that testimony, the decision maker here had imported improper criteria into its decision? That is improper from the standpoint of Medicaid law.
Well, to the extent that they're overruling the treating doctor's competing opinion, yes.
So we keep on coming back to that. The treating doctor says we need it and we need it now. End of case.
Yes, and the problem is that essentially Ms. Urban is placed in a catch-22 because the Medicaid program said no, surgery is not appropriate now. Even though her doctor said, I want to see you for a follow-up appointment, when she tries to make that follow-up appointment, they deny payment for the follow-up appointments. So essentially, Ms. Urban has no way of ever even getting back to the specialist to be evaluated again, at least not to have the Medicaid program pay for that follow-up.
Well, wait a second. Is that an issue on appeal here that she's unable to apply for treatment again for this problem, or that she's being denied further treatment?
No, that was not an issue raised on appeal. The reason that I mentioned it is to just illustrate that this is a more a denial in more of a final sense than. Maybe it might seem on the surface. It wasn't just saying, you can lose weight and come back. There's no room for saying, well, the doctor has been able to assess her and thinks that this is now appropriate, even though she hasn't met your numerical standard. They've closed that off as well.
Let's vary the facts a little bit. Let's assume that this young woman's treating physician testified the way he did, but the state, in response, brought into the fair hearing the testimony of the five leading specialists in this area from the top medical schools around the country. And all five testified that it would be very dangerous to have this surgery right now because this woman first needed to lose weight. Would that make any difference to your analysis?
I think that is a different case, Your Honor. Here, you know, in your situation, we have specialists in the field. That's not the case that we had with Ms. Urban. No one was looking to the standards that plastic surgeons in the field rely on and routinely use in evaluating these patients. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
You're into your rebuttal, so you're welcome to stop now.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Ann Woolfolk. I'm here on behalf of Vincent McConey, who's the named appellee in this case, Secretary of Health and Social Services. This Court's already recognized the critical issue, whether this breast reduction surgery was medically necessary for Ms. Urban in December of 2004 when the first physician, Dr. Chang, sought the prior authorization.
Let me stop before you get into it. As I understand what happened, it is that there was a request for authorization to do this procedure, but that at the time that request was made, the appellant's own doctor was saying this should be done, but first she should lose weight, and that matters proceeded with that being the record, if you will, but that by the time it got to one of the hearings in 05, the same doctor had said, okay, I know what I said before, but she's lost some weight. It didn't make a difference. She hasn't lost all the weight I wanted, but given everything, it's my opinion now that it's necessary at this point without losing any more weight. Is that basically correct in terms of what the facts are?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So at the point at which a decision is being made, is it correct that the subsequent opinion is part of what the decision-making process is or not?
No, Your Honor, it's not. No, Your Honor, what was properly before the hearing officer was the denial at issue, the denial that had been appealed for a fair hearing.
Okay, fine. And no, not fine in the sense of necessarily I agree, but at least I understand. Given what we have here, how does a person who needs to get authorization for a medical procedure, whose circumstances have changed over the period of time that it took to get the thing started and then get to a hearing, how does that come before an appropriate tribunal to be decided? Or are we supposed to start over again and
yes,
have another year and a half or what?
I don't believe it would be a year and a half, Your Honor, but yes, circumstances have changed and there's a new basis now to seek prior authorization, then the treating physician needs to seek that prior authorization, and if it's denied, it goes forward on that record.
So in all this time, that's never been done here?
The record shows that there was a second request for prior authorization in May of 2005. That would be Dr. Chang's second letter.
And what happened to that?
The record doesn't reflect, and I don't know.
Well, I suspect, since we're here, that she probably hasn't had the surgery.
I understand that she has not had the surgery, and understand there are no pending requests for prior authorization. I've learned that. I spoke with the Medicaid office on those points. I do not know specifically what happened to that second request for prior authorization. DPCI, the managed care company, was required by law to respond in some way. My belief would be that it was denied, and that would have been formed the foundation for a second fair hearing that would have actually addressed her current medical condition. But the point of the fair hearing is to test or to allow the claimant to challenge the decision at the time under the circumstances when it was made, which was December of 2004.
Okay, but wait a second. We're not talking about somebody asking for a housing permit or, you know, something like that, that is sort of, this is the situation, here are my plans, approve them or disapprove them. We're talking about a human being who every day changes, and certainly somebody who has a medical condition that arguably needs some sort of treatment is going to be going through a process of change, either deteriorating or, you know, or improving or whatever, but medical conditions aren't stagnant. How is it that this system does not allow for updated information that's relevant to the pending matter?
Updated information, if it related to the condition at the time of the denial, to the extent that's updated, that would be permissible. But the challenge here is to a denial that had happened in December. And to come into a hearing and bring in a medical condition that's in effect 6 months later defeats the purpose of the fair hearing, which is to, again, test the sufficiency of the December 2004 denial.
Well, you know, if you have to put it this way, her treating doctor as of December 2004 said she needs the surgery, but she needs to lose weight first. By May of 2005, the treating doctor says she's lost some weight. Her breasts have actually gotten larger, or they haven't reduced in size or whatever, and I now believe that she needs this treatment regardless of whether she loses any more weight or not. Doesn't that bear upon his decision, his initial decision, which was anticipating that if she lost weight, there would be other beneficial results, and now he's proven himself wrong, so he's going to go back and change his provide more information about his original decision. Why would that not come in under that kind of convoluted analysis?
Well, a couple of points. First, Dr. Chang, the treating physician in May of 2005, when he made his second request, didn't even then say that the surgery was medically necessary. He said, I feel that she is at a reasonable weight at this present time to proceed with surgery. So he still is not making any kind of unequivocal statement that the surgery is medically necessary. But even having said that, the proper analysis, it's our position, is still to look to that December 2004 prior authorization. Now, having said that, nonetheless, even considering all of the testimony that came in May of 2005, it was still an appropriate legal call for the hearing officer to find that the procedure was, even in May of 2005, not medically necessary.
Isn't it clear on the face of the hearing officer's opinion that the officer did not apply the standard under R5? I mean, you say in your brief, the hearing officer concluded approving Ms. Urban's breast reduction surgery at this time is not the least costly, appropriate, available health service alternative and does not represent an effective and appropriate use of government funds. That is, the hearing officer concluded that although the surgery may indeed correct or ameliorate Ms. Urban's condition, it was not necessary as required by Section 1396D-R5. That's quite a leap, isn't it? I mean, that's the hearing officer wasn't focused on R5 at all. Wasn't the officer focusing on the definition of medically necessary as defined by the Division of Social Services manual?
There's a regulation in effect, that that defines medical necessity. And yes, that is the definition that he applied.
So why shouldn't this matter be remanded to apply the correct standard?
That is the correct standard. In fact, necessary to correct or ameliorate means something more than just surgery that a treating physician
deems appropriate. Well, let me rephrase it. To apply the language of R5.
Using the state definition of medical necessity does apply the language of R5. R5 requires that services be granted when they are necessary to correct or ameliorate. And the state, it's conceded by both, agreed by the parties, may define medical necessity. The state has done that. What makes
So medical necessity under the state definition includes least costly?
The hearing officer in this case did not, his analysis didn't turn on the cost at all. The hearing officer's analysis here, by appropriate, he meant medically appropriate. And he looked at the testimony from Dr. Chang and the testimony from Dr. Cooper, as well as the testimony from the DPCI physician, Dr. Waldorf. And he put the testimony together and decided, based on the evidence, that the surgery would be safer if she lost weight, that it would be in her best health interest to lose weight, and that there would be no harm to her if she delayed the surgery until such time as she had the opportunity to lose weight and perhaps lose breast tissue. And that was what he meant by appropriate. He wasn't looking at cost. He wasn't adding an extra criterion. What he did is determine medical necessity based on the testimony of the three physicians, all of whom testified basically in agreement that...
Well, aren't you putting words in his mouth that aren't there? I mean, didn't he say the first thing at this time is not the least costly? I mean, wasn't that the first thing that he applied?
But if you look further at his analysis and what the reason why he actually held, what he writes is, because allowing the claimant to continue her weight loss efforts will not negatively impact her from a physical perspective and will positively impact her from a surgical perspective if she does qualify for the surgery, approving her breast reduction surgery at this point is not the least costly appropriate available health service alternative and does not represent an effective and appropriate use of program funds. The particular evidence he relied on all went to the medical considerations, not the cost considerations.
Even though he uses the word cost?
He does, because he is quoting from that specific criterion under the state definition of medical necessity. But what he's looking at are health considerations. He cites it because that's what the criterion says, but he never relies on cost.
Is that the only conclusion that can be reached from that language? In other words, he's using the word not the least costly, but not thinking about cost.
Well, he's simply citing that it doesn't meet that criterion, and he spells out the entire criterion. But what he's saying is it's not appropriate for medical reasons. And he's basing that on the testimony of all three physicians.
So you're saying that if a philanthropist came along and said, "I'm paying for this procedure, but I will only pay for it if you determine that it's medically necessary," you're saying that the hearing officer would have reached the same result because, with or without any considerations of cost, this was not an appropriate procedure to authorize.
That's correct.
But we have to draw that conclusion from a statement that says this is not the least costly effective treatment considering for the use of state funds.
Certainly he put the language in there because he was quoting the entire criterion. But if you look at the discussion of the hearing officer overall, cost never enters into his analysis. He's looking only at the health benefits to waiting and on until Ms. Urban is an appropriate way to do the surgery.
I just want to go back momentarily to the May
2005 letter that Dr. Chang wrote, that letter was written after the decision had already been made. Is that correct? So there was no pending proceeding at that time?
That's correct. The court asked, asked appellant, was the state permitted to consider all the testimony when it made its decision, the hearing officer, that the procedure was not medically necessary? And the answer is yes. And the hearing officer did consider all that testimony. Yes, there was the statement by Dr. Cooper that it was medically necessary, but he testified on other medical matters that the hearing officer should have and, in fact, did consider. And once more, I think it bears emphasis that the state is not trying to permanently foreclose this surgery. The state is requiring that Ms. Urban have the surgery when it is medically safer for her and after there's been some opportunity for her to lose weight, which would be in her general health interest.
Well, I don't know that this is appropriate to be considering since apparently it's not part of the appeal here, but appellant's counsel raised the additional problem that she can't even go see a doctor anymore or get funding to go see a doctor anymore to get the follow-up medical opinion that would be necessary to get authorization now, let's say, if it's appropriate now. What's the answer to that problem?
Well, one answer is there was what appellant is referring to is a denial of authorization for additional visits with the plastic surgeon. And the response by DPCI, the managed care company, was that she needed to bring her weight down before they'd authorize those visits. The easy answer for that isn't under appeal here. In fact, it's unclear from the record why that denial of pre-authorization was even in the record, because it does have no bearing. It came in over the objection of a counsel for DPCI. So the quick answer is, she had a right to challenge that, perhaps did. Again, the record doesn't reflect what happened to that, and may have been authorized to see additional visits to the plastic surgeon. But nonetheless, it was DPCI's physician's view that based on national criteria, she wouldn't qualify for the surgery until she came down to 160 pounds, which would have brought her BMI down to 30. And therefore apparently denied the prior authorization. Is she denied the opportunity for surgery? No. She, assuming that prior authorization withstood scrutiny, she has to lose weight before she can get the surgery. And that involves even going to the plastic surgery for that pre-authorization, plastic surgeon. The court asked appellant, were the arguments about treating physician and the argument about medical necessity under EPSDT really the same argument? And I think it bears mention that Dr. Cooper, on whose testimony appellant relies, is not the treating physician. Delaware case law does address some treating physician in some case law and suggests that where a physician sees someone once, isn't doing the treatment. There was Dr. Cooper, DPCI never received a request for prior authorization from Dr. Cooper, so apparently he wouldn't be doing the surgery. He was there simply as an expert. The appellant's mother so testified that she went to see him as a second opinion. He was qualified as an expert. He examined the patient once, had no knowledge of her medical history. He doesn't qualify as a treating physician, and therefore his opinion does not entitle to the deference that appellant claims that it warrants. If deference should be given to any of the physicians, it would be Dr. Chang, who back in December of 2004 said that it would really be better if she lost weight, and then in May of 2005 still didn't say that surgery was medically necessary. He just said it would be reasonable to go forward with the surgery at that time. And I think, therefore, Dr. Cooper's testimony is not entitled to the deference, and the hearing officer was well within his rights to accept that expert testimony, accept his testimony that it was the accepted practice, but to reject the single statement in his testimony that the procedure was medically necessary, when in fact he testified as to other matters, including that she should lose weight. He recommends that all his patients who are obese lose weight, and that the surgery would be safer if she lost weight. The risks are enhanced. And finally, that there was no prejudice to her, at least from a physical standpoint, to delay the surgery until she had the opportunity to lose weight. And I see my time is...
So just so I understand, assuming that the standard actually applied under the regulations was the wrong standard to apply, and there should have been specific reliance on R5, by the hearing officer, is it your position that that was harmless error because of this other testimony that you just recited?
The standard under R5 is still whether a procedure is medically necessary. And on this record, the hearing officer was well within his authority to find that the procedure was not medically necessary. So there was compliance with R5. It was not harmless error. It was not error at all.
Thank you. So tell me, did your client reapply after the May 5 letter?
No, Your Honor. She did not apply after the May 5 letter. The record reflects DPI's response to her second application for surgery, and that is the May 05 notice saying your office visits aren't covered anymore, and that's as far as it's gone.
So notwithstanding the fact that Dr. Chang is her treating physician, right, or not? Was.
Yes, Dr. Chang was.
Okay. So notwithstanding the fact that her treating physician in May of 2005 said, or arguably said, we should go forward with the surgery now, you didn't apply for authorization for that procedure?
Well, Dr. Chang's did apply in May of 2005, and the response that Ms. Urban received was the May 2005 notice saying, we're not going to pay for your office visit. She had already had the office visit, and they denied the office visit.
And she didn't appeal that decision or pursue it?
She did not pursue that decision, no.
Under R5, the language necessary to ameliorate or correct, et cetera, do you agree that necessary implicitly means medically necessary?
Yes. In fact, the statute, I think, does indicate medically necessary to correct or ameliorate a physical or mental health condition.
All right. And so this, the state is basically saying that that standard was applied here, and that it's no error, not a harmless error, it's just no error. What's wrong with that argument?
The problem is that they're not applying the correct standard, and while this is an issue of first impression in Delaware, all of the other courts that have looked at this, including the 4th, 5th, 7th, and 11th circuits, have said you can, for children's benefits, you do not have the same discretion that you have with defining medical necessity for adults. You must first look at whether the service at issue is covered under the statute, and here there's no dispute that surgery falls into a statutory category. And then second, you look at whether the surgery is necessary to correct or ameliorate. Do we need this service to make this child's health condition better? That's the appropriate inquiry, and that's not the inquiry that was made here.
What was the inquiry in your view?
Well, the hearing officer's decision says, is it the least costly, appropriate, available health services alternative? The reasoning raised by Medicaid was whether it was the most appropriate alternative. And that also goes back into a question that the court had about whether this is a static process. Yes, there was an initial request in 04, and the first denial notice in January 05 said, well, it's not directly related to treat her medical condition. And then they reviewed it again in February and said, well, it's not standard of care and it's not the most appropriate. So the process does evolve, and the Medicaid program comes up with different reasons throughout.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate counsel's arguments, and we'll take the matter under advisement and take a brief recess.